Sorry friends, we have to conduct the classes and other programs in this truncated space with some inconveniences, and this will go on till we move finally to the new space that is getting built, and hopefully you will have some inconveniences, but you will tolerate them for some time. Sorry about that. We have been studying this wonderful scripture, Bhagavad Gita, for last some years, and we saw that how practical it is and how beautifully it brings the purpose of life and the means to achieve this purpose right at our doorstep. It is as we had been seeing that this has the dimension of understanding the theory and implementing that understanding in our day-to-day practice. Both these aspects are provided in Bhagavad Gita. We saw, just let us take a brief review of what we have been studying, because we are meeting after the summer break, and so things tend to get forgotten. So let us refresh our memories about what we had been studying. We saw that Arjuna is the disciple in Bhagavad Gita, who is very much like us in the sense that, like all of us, want a happy life, a trouble-free life. Arjuna also wants that. Just as we crave for success in life, Arjuna also seeks success in life. Just as Arjuna, just as we feel that there are some great qualities that we should practice, like compassion and kindness, Arjuna also wants that. And we see, like Arjuna happened to have, that we, in this struggle, we come across many very grueling conflicts. The moments come when we really find it difficult to decide what course should be taken. We come to a fork on the street, and then we are undecided which side to take. It is a very difficult situation, and Arjuna came to such a situation. What it indicates is that the scripture is meant to actually show us the path in day-to-day life. It is not something that is about the life after death, or whether I should be going to heaven or hell and so forth. But it is the actual living of the day-to-day life that is being discussed here. These are the practical difficulties that we all face. And so, what should I do when I come to this situation? Very conflicting things, that on one side I feel that this is the ideal and this is what I should do. On the other side, various weaknesses, they also come to fore and try to dissuade us from that path. So, Bhagavad Gita shows here, through the example of Arjuna, that it is a natural tendency that, well, let me just be as it is. Let me forget the ideal and my resolve and succumb to the weakness. because that is where we feel that I don't have to then do anything. Anything that requires us to put in staunch positive efforts, there we feel jittery. And if we don't have to do anything, just relax, then we feel it is a good thing to do. So Arjuna's life had that that junction where he had determined to fight the war to get what was thought to be their rightful kingdom, also to mitigate all the injustice that had been inflicted on them. And that was what the idea Arjuna had, that these evil Kauravas need to be taught a lesson, and they are not learning except through the war. Other means, peaceful means had been tried, didn't work, so war is the ultimate course that is left. And so Arjuna came there with that resolve to fight the war. But the war has its consequences, and not easy consequences, that you will be seeing the death of so many of your near and dear. That is one of the things that the Mahabharata war is presenting there, that the two sides fighting, they were they from the same clan, the cousins from the same clan, they were fighting, and on both sides the great warriors were very closely genetically and otherwise too connected. And so a dilemma presented itself, that now, yes, I know it's a just war, I know that I must fight it, I know that I have tried all other means and my conscience is clear about it, still the weakness creeps in. So then I will have to kill all these dear ones, maybe I myself will get killed. And what am I going to get in exchange for that? Even if I win the war, still it will be a huge loss. And I may lose the war too, I may get killed also. Should I, in that case, proceed with the war or just run away? And the inertia in us, or the instinct to run away, it became prevalent, it became more pronounced there, and Arjuna decided that he won't fight the war, he will run away, he will not now, he's not ready to fight the war anymore, because the war causes lot of loss of life, lot of distress, tremendous difficulties, all that comes to one. And so Arjuna was thinking, what should be done now? But the other side also was not very satisfactory for him. If he doesn't fight the war, then he had that problem, then I will be not doing my duty. I will be not standing up to my resolve. It will express my weakness. So what should be done in that case? And Lord Krishna therefore steps in to give him the advice. He seeks the advice. He tells Lord that, well, I am your disciple, I am not finding a way out of this conflict, this dilemma, please guide me. And then Lord Krishna starts guiding him by showing that look at what is permanent and what is impermanent. The important thing in life is to pay more attention or hold on to that which is permanent and that which is passing away, that which anyway goes away. Understand it as temporary, impermanent. And that brings lot of clarity in one's thought. When you know something to be impermanent, then you know that even though you try to hold on to it, you can't do it. And that which is permanent, that never goes away, that is, one has to hold on to that. So, Arjuna is shown that one's real self is immortal. The bodies, they come and go. Body is a continuously changing phenomena. It is in fact a process, a chain of different chemical reactions that one calls as body. It is change. It is not enough to say that the body changes. A series of change is given the name as this particular body. It is, even as I am saying, the body is undergoing change. It is like a river. Continuously flowing, you cannot take two dips in the same river, as it keeps on flowing. Similarly, there is not the same body even for two moments. It is passing continuously, running away something. And yet, there is something that does not go away. That does not change, that is permanently there. And because of this superimposition, that which is permanent gets superimposed on that which is impermanent. And thus, that which is impermanent starts appearing as permanent. Like they say, if you are looking at a flower and by the side of the flower or in front of the flower there is a red glass, then the flower will appear to be red. The flower in itself may be a white flower, but because of the proximity, because of the getting covered by the red glass, now the redness of the glass gets superimposed on the flower and the flower appears to be red. Similarly, the permanence of the self gets superimposed on the impermanent passing body. And thus, the body appears to be the self, I, which appears to be permanent. But just give it a clear look, think clearly. The spiritual life is really nothing but learning to think clearly. Think clearly. Arjuna is told, look, that beautiful verse in the second chapter, that even in this body, you have dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara. That in this body you experience that you were a child, you grow up, become a young man or woman, and then the decline starts, you become an old person, and then the death overtakes. But in all these processes, like you, when you are a child, you become a youth, you become an old person, you know that the body has changed and you are same. So, similarly, when the next link comes, next link of death, still you do not go away. The body has again attained the next stage, that's all. So, don't grieve about that. It is a very important lesson for us to begin examining things clearly in the light of this knowledge that a body is impermanent. It is continuously going away, and the self, it doesn't go away anywhere. It is permanent. And this knowledge, when we get this knowledge, you can see the self does not undergo any change. And that brings you this, logically speaking, a very clear understanding that therefore the self is immortal. It doesn't undergo any change in time, so it is immortal. Also, because it is not limited to body, all the limitations of space also are connected with body. And therefore the self has no limitation of space either. So the self is infinite, immortal. So that realization has to be taken up. That was the next thing that Bhagavad Gita starts telling right in the second chapter, that although Arjuna has been told this as theory, and we all understand it, we are very intelligent people, so we understand it, but what Lord wants to emphasize is it is not only a theory, but can be converted into our experience. And that is what is called yoga. The theory is very good and needs to be understood, no doubt about that. But what is more important is learning to bring the practical aspect to life, that whatever this understanding is, can actually become functional in one's life, and thereby it will bring actual illumination. And how is it is to be done? It is in a way simple, that whatever you are doing is fine. You don't have to change your activities, only change the direction of those activities, that's all. It is a great lesson because many of us have this feeling that, okay, so if I have to lead a spiritual life, then that means I have to give up my present vocation, present profession, present status in life and all that. I am, say, a married man or married woman, or I am working in this particular capacity. I have these duties associated with my life as because of my station in life. I have to do all these things. Do I need to stop it? Bhagavad Gita says, no, no. In fact, you should not stop it. If you try to stop it, and not only that, you will not attain to spiritual wisdom. What will happen is that you will become an inertiatic, lazy person. You will go further away from the ideal. In fact, it is not possible to stop activity. So if you are not doing your duty, you will start doing something that is not your duty. You will start doing something wrong, something bad. So sticking to your duty is good, but it should be done in an intelligent way, in a skillful way. And that is a beautiful couplet that comes in Bhagavad Gita, a beautiful verse, which says that yoga karmasu kaushalam. This yoga is the skill in work. That is, while doing work, you should practice this spiritual wisdom in life, let the work become a vehicle or tool. To give an analogy, that if you are, say, hammering nail in the wall, it is many of us have to do such work. So take a nail and take hammer and start hammering the nail in the wall. And now if you hit the hammer instead of nail, if you hit it on your finger, will that be called a skillful job? It is not a skillful job. It is you are hurting yourself. So the skillful way of putting the nail in the wall would be, while the nail will go in the wall, the hammer will hit the nail, your fingers will remain safe. Your fingers will not get hurt. So doing work in this way means the work will get done, but you will not get into the bondage of work. That is skillfully doing work. That is yoga. Do the work, but do not get attached. Do not get bound by that work. What happens with us normally, we hit the hammer hard and, well, crush our own fingers. It is, we do not know how to work skillfully. And therefore, while the hammer has the capacity to put the nail in the wall, we do not know how to properly hit on the head of the nail, and thus we end up in injuring our fingers. So also with work. Work is a liberating power. Work can has that potential to liberate us from this bondage. But since we do not know how to do it skillfully, we end up in getting bound while doing it. Get bound by the results of the work. That is what is known as law of karma. You do something, you get the result of it. That result again in turn becomes an action, a karma, and then you again get the result of it, and that cycle goes on. It is something that is that never ends. At this level, obviously there is no end to it, like walking on a circular path. It never ends. A person was wanted a work, always wanted a work. And then how can that fellow be stopped? So somebody told that, put on a circular path. That fellow was told, stop when the road ends. Till then, keep on walking. This is a short road, but keep on walking, and at the end, give me a call, and that your work is done. So it never gets done. So also like our work, I hear from many people, and it is the case with me too, that somebody called me the other day, that, oh, Swami, you know, right now I am so busy, so busy, I have no time. But after this is done, then I will be free. And I reminded that person that you have been telling me this for last 8 years, that after these 3-4 months, then I will become free, then I will have ample time. But such things do not come in life. It is always one work leads to another, then that to another. The life like that is finished. It is one day, as Swami Vivekananda beautifully puts it, that we are fighting and fighting for what? We do not know. We keep on working, and then one day we die. We do not know what we did, for what we were living, and so forth. So that is not the way that the Lord wants us to live. Lord wants us to live a goal-oriented life, a life geared to fulfillment, a life that is directed to bring ultimate satisfaction to it. And so ultimate satisfaction comes when you see that the tool that you have, the work, that work has to be just done in the right direction. Do the work. The process appears to be as such quite simple. Do the work. Don't get entangled into the results of it. Do the work with freedom, not as a slave, dictated by the results of it. And do the work, and then you will see that the results of that work will not have the power to bind you. And that is a practice. And gradually one learns that practice, that technique. One has to begin from where one is. It is a practice that develops stage by stage, like climbing on the staircase. You go ahead one step, second step, third step, and finally you find yourself on the top. So similarly, this idea of karma yoga, or the yoga of action, as told by Lord, very beautiful. One can practice it step by step from where one is. It is impossible for most of us in the beginning to work without seeking any results for oneself. It is a commonly asked question that how can anybody do work if there is no motivation for working for something? I have the motivation, I get something when I work, and that motivates my work. If I am not to think about the results, I will not get motivated, I will not work. And therefore, how can a person work without thinking about the what one is getting or not getting? Always this is a tendency that, I'll do it, but what is in it for me? A common question that gets asked, I would not mind doing it, but why should I do it if there is nothing in it for me? So, for such a person, do the work with motive. It is better than not doing work. That is the first step, that do the work with motive. Don't remain idle. Idleness or being lazy is the worst thing. So work. Don't remain lazy or idle. Even if you are working for motive to satisfy certain desires and expecting many things in life, it certainly is a step better than not working at all. It is much better to work with desires than not working at all. But then the next step is there. Work. Be ready to give for what you get. That is the next step. At least understand this law of give and take in the world. When you want to get something, you know that you have to give something. Be honest about it. That common expectation will be, let me get without giving. Free. We want things for free. And we know how people fall for it. So all the this business organization, they send you so many these ads. If you do this, this will be free. and then we feel, wow, they are giving so much for free. Nobody gives us anything for free, but that is a psychological impact that it is generated. That if you do this, you will get something for free. And you wonder sometimes that, oh, what great people are there in the world. They are so concerned about giving me things for free. But it is not the case. Soon enough one realizes that such things do not happen. So, first thing that as a matter of spiritual evolution, one should learn is this idea that if I am to get something, I have to give something. And giving is required for getting. And then comes the next idea, that you will notice that if you are giving, you are getting more joy. If you see this, that more joy is obtained by giving rather than taking. So you wonder then that if I want happiness, and if I can give, then why should I keep on waiting to get and then give? Just give for my own joy. And let me give for my own joy without the thought of getting something. You will automatically get. As the automatic result of your works, you will get. But you will not be then bound by those desires. That will be the great achievement. You will learn to give without thinking of what in return you are getting. That is a tremendous freedom, friends. And then comes the next step in this. In Bhagavad Gita, you will see in 2nd chapter, 3rd chapter, 4th chapter, 5th chapter, this idea is developed in wonderful details, that how ultimately one realizes the truth that there is nobody, I am not giving anything, no work is really mine, that I and mine vanishes from the work, Lord alone is the doer. That thought becomes very prominently established in life through this practice. And one comes to that stage of fulfillment through work. Then Lord turns to the idea of learning the concentration. One has to develop focusing, concentrating, meditating. Why so? Because unless we learn that, we will not be able to keep the ideal constantly burning in our thoughts. It is, we will be thinking of ideal, but that thought will slip away again, and you may be in the morning, one decides, let me do this spirit, practice the spirit of yoga of action. I will do all the actions in this spirit. But since the concentration is not cultivated, this thought doesn't stay for too long. The temptations are all around, and then they grasp you, you never know. And at night one may remember, oh, I was thinking earlier in the morning that I wanted to work in the spirit of yoga, but tomorrow I will try. Then gradually one understands that one has to learn to hold on to an idea with concentration. It is, see, if you, this is the technique of observing one's mind, that how the thoughts slip away. You try to hold on to it, but before you can really have a grasp, you see it slips away. Especially the those ideals, the thoughts about one's ideal, difficult to hold on to that. It is certain pleasurable ideas one can hold on to for some time, but they do not lead us anywhere. So one has to learn to concentrate on, to meditate on that which one thinks as the highest ideal in life. You can think what is the highest ideal for yourself, but once you decide that this is my goal, this is my ideal, now one has to develop that technique of holding on to it, concentrating on it. And that is what is discussed very beautifully in 6th chapter, the technique of meditation, concentration, how the different aspects of our physical and mental life need to be connected to it, and how all these things are to be synchronized so that our life of meditation can become a mainstream constant practice in life. Then another very important part of Bhagavad Gita begins from 7th chapter, and that is learning to turn our mind. Our mind is a funny thing. Even if you tell the mind that, well, this is not good for you, this is not something that is beneficial for you, even if it understands it, what it goes to is not necessarily it understands as right, but something that it likes. Like if suppose I like sweets a lot, and the physician would tell me, "Oh, Swami, don't eat so much sugar. You have already put on a lot of weight. Don't try to be chubbier than this. Avoid eating sugars." Then I understand, yes, this is the nice correct thing to do. But the mind goes to sugar. And then what it tells, one spoon, what does it matter? One candy, and occasionally I don't eat every day. My friend Vishwanath is offering me how if I don't eat, how bad he will feel. And so therefore I find out all these pretexts and then eat them. Because mind goes to the things, to what I love, what I like, not necessarily what I think to be right. And so, that intellectual aspect is very good, but our actions are not always determined by what we intellectually conceive to be right. Rather, they are governed by likes and dislikes. So now the challenge is to turn our likings towards the ideal of life. And that is what is called, technically speaking, the yoga of devotion or bhakti yoga. And for most of us, let us say for 99% people, this is really the path that is constitutionally very important. The turning our mind to God. Turning intellect, fine, important, but turning the mind to God, that is more important. And there the techniques become very useful. Gradually we see as Bhagavad Gita progresses, Arjuna's attitude also starts changing. The spiritual illumination is such a thing that as it starts entering us, our life starts changing. It is our awareness starts changing, our life, our activities, everything then starts changing. Arjuna's thinking earlier was very similar to what a common person will just think in a mundane life. That, okay, I want to solve this conflict. This is a big problem for me, and I am suffering a lot because of it. And if somebody can solve this problem for me, take me out of this suffering, that will be enough for me. Arjuna never, in the beginning, does not ask Lord, how can I realize God? How my mind will go to God? No such question. Most mundane question has been asked to Lord Krishna, question that we all would ask, how my sufferings in life will go. Simple question. Who doesn't have that question? Tell me. Is there anybody who would say that, oh Lord, I want more and more sufferings? No, everybody wants to get rid of sufferings anyway. That was the simple question. But then, now his mind starts dwelling more on the truth, the reality. Instead of seeing Lord Krishna as his friend, now he is seeing, in addition to seeing him as friend and a guide, he is also seeing him now as God, a manifestation of God. Slowly this change has come in the perspective. When we saw, as from the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, that how Lord has been requested by Arjuna, and the questions of Arjuna therefore changed. Now he is not asking about, you know, how I am suffering in this mire, please take me out of it. No. He says, well, tell me how my mind can be concentrated on you. How can I think of you? In what ways can I think of you? The 10th chapter that we studied before actually it's finished before we stopped for the summer break. That 10th chapter was about feeling the God in various ways. Arjuna has asked Lord that, well, my mind goes to various big things, glorious things, that is with all of us. What is the person next door doing? I am not really concerned of that, but I watch what Obama is doing, and because important persons, you know, what that particular celebrity is coming to here, okay, then I want to go to watch. It is whatever is important in the world, whatever is very famous, whatever is super ordinary, that attracts the mind. So, Arjuna asked there to Krishna, well, in how many ways can I think of you? Please let me know. And Lord tells that, you know, in all these glorious things, great musicians, wonderful literary figures, great scientists, most powerful politicians, in all of these know that their glory is because of me. I am the most glorious in them. Like it is all different instruments that run on electricity. What is that makes it go? It is electricity. It is that power that is manifesting through this equipment. So, this equipment is running because of the electricity. These lights are shining because of the electric power. All different gadgets that you have running on electricity, they also are really manifestations of the electric power. So, Lord says that, look, all those big things, glorious things, that is, all of them, there the glory belongs to God, not to that thing in itself. The glory is of Lord, so let the mind turn to Lord. When the mind turns to something very nice, or Niagara Falls, otherwise you can see the tiny falls here and there, not very famous. So Niagara Falls, so it is, you talk about it, people from all over the world come to see it. So you can say, Lord may say there, amongst all the falls I am the Niagara. Amongst all the rivers, I am so and so, Amazon. It is, Lord would say that you have to add those things there, because it is told only in Indian context. So only those examples have been given. You can see that whatever is big, that is how the conclusion comes there, that yadyat vibhutimat sattvam shrimad urjitameva va, whatever is glorious, big, great, that which attracts your mind, you nod with great admiration. Wow, what a wonderful feat this person has done, or what a great mountain this is. All that, wherever you see glory, know that the glory is that of God, so that mind will turn to God. Now, the 11th chapter has a very special dimension. It is only in Bhagavad Gita you have this idea that seeing everything in God. God is the sum and substance of everything, and God alone is real. Everything is contained in God. You have, suppose, all the things that you need put in a bag. And now if you have the bag, what it means is that you have everything that you need by having that bag. So all universe, when you see that it is contained in God, then you, if you get God, you don't lack anything. So God is therefore to be aspired for. But one does not believe in it. Even though intellectually one may understand it, intellectual assent doesn't mean that actually agreeing or believing its truth. It is, we may yes say God alone is everything, but I want God, but I want this also, I want that also, I want to become a big scientist, I want to be God, to realize God, no doubt, but in addition to that, I want to become a big scientist too. I want to become, be a religious, spiritual person and realize God, but I also have the aspiration of becoming the President of United States. I may have that desire to realize God. That is, I will do that, I have no problem about it, but I also want to do the lot of traveling. And I want to go to moon, and I am waiting for those spacecrafts to be to become available. So it is all this I want in addition to realizing God. So now Lord is Arjuna has understood this, but wants to really see it, that all these things are contained in God. And so, if you realize God, you get all of that. You don't have to make any separate effort that to become a scientist or to become a great politician. All that you wanted to realize, the sum and substance of all that will be seen in God. Because the whole universe is contained in Lord. Now, therefore, Arjuna is requesting. This chapter begins not with a question per se of Arjuna. It is not a question, but it is a request, an earnest request or an earnest prayer. The question is one thing, that, well, I don't understand this. You made this statement, but I have problem with this. Please explain. So, you say that with some sense that you demand an answer there. And you have made, the other person has made a positive statement, an affirmation. And so, since you don't agree with it, you want more explanation, you seek it. A question is asked about that, or certain things that you don't know, maybe the other person would be knowing, you ask a question about that though. But here there is no question really. Arjuna is speaking to Krishna, but with a request that you have something that I need, I want, please give it to me. It is not, will you give it to me? No, not that. Please give it to me. It is entreating. What is shown here is that as one progresses in spiritual life, a loving bond starts developing and strengthening in one's awareness. Lord seems to be then your own. As you feel God to be your own, what happens? You can start then asking for God, will you please give me, not that, please give me this. You have this, please give me this. And so Arjuna says that the first verse of the 11th chapter, the 11th chapter has a lot of poetry in it, but it is very simple to understand. In the sense that lot of it is different analogies and we can really, we don't need to spend lot of time in analyzing each and every verse here. Because it is, as we will see later on, it is a picture that is described here. And picture, you look at it. If you have a book, you read line by line. If there is a picture, in one sight you grasp it and then think about it. So this 11th chapter is painting a picture of the universe contained in Lord. But Arjuna asks a question, a request is presented by Arjuna in a very beautiful way. Arjuna says, मदनुग्रहाय परमं गुह्यम अध्यात्मसन्निहितं यत्त्वयोक्तं वचस्तेन मोहोयं विगतो मम. By the supreme and secret discourse known as Adhyatma that you have delivered for favoring me, this delusion of mine has been destroyed. This delusion means thinking that this world is apart from God and the world is to be aspired apart from God. That delusion is going away. I am feeling the reality of God more and more. And this change comes in life, friends. That, that which is impermanent, that actually doesn't then become so important in our awareness. That which is permanent, that assumes the real importance. And so, this question, this idea is put forth by Arjuna here, that it is my delusion is going away. And then he will tell that you have described how the beings arise. Bhavapyayo hi bhutanam shrutau vistarisho maya tvatta kamalapatraksha mahatmyam apichavyayam eva metad yathathatvam atmanam parameshwara drashtum icchamite rupam aishwaram purushottama. Verily, about the origin and dissolution of beings I have heard from you in detail, as also, O lotus-eyed one, about your inexhaustible greatness. What you say about yourself, O Lord, is just so. O best of person, I desire to see your divine form. I want to see it actually. Seeing is believing. Our human consciousness is somehow in a big way generated by our sight. Our sight, when you see something, then you know it. Seeing, then it is far beyond even believing. Do you believe that I am standing in front of you and giving a talk? Believing is too weak a word for it. You know it because you see it. If you are not seeing it, then you may have doubt about it. Oh, was it so? I heard differently and so forth. But when you see, then you really know it to be true. It is said, therefore, that more than 50% of our neural network, the brain network, is concerned with processing of the visual inputs. It is, therefore, so important. For dogs, it is their sense of smell. That their world is created by the sense of smell. They do not create their world more by vision. Vision is just a confirmation. But more important thing for dogs is the sense of smell. So even if the dog is not seeing, the smell will identify that thing for dog. So Arjuna says that I want to see this. You told me, I accept that what you have been telling is true, but I really want to see it. So if you feel that it is possible, please let me have that vision. That, oh Lord, if you think that form of yours can be seen by me, then oh Lord of yogis, show me that eternal self. Please show me that. And then Arjuna, through the grace of God, sees it. We shall discuss those things in the next class of next Friday. So we'll conclude here. Any questions? So we will conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvina Srita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.